Chazal would typically read Parshas Vayishlach when they would travel, in particular to Rome, during the very difficult and strained period of Roman-Jewish relations, around the time of the Beis HaMikdash destruction, and certainly for the 120 years subsequently. Rabbi Akiva in particular, before he was martyred, was very involved in these trips. Rabbi Meir was very involved. So they would read Vayishlach to try to calibrate a type of, not a response, but an attitude towards these types of confrontations. And in some ways, Vayishlach was very relevant and very illustrative for Chazal during that very dark period. And in an equal sense, it's very helpful for us in our more triumphant and radiant period. What it demonstrates is it demonstrates a person, a tzaddik, who has been guaranteed success, whose name is about to be changed based on a very triumphant contest with a midnight visitor, who has triumphed over 20 years plus over a very deceitful and conniving father-in-law, who has challenged HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide and shelter him by almost contracting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha, if you provide for me, then I'll return. And who HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly told to return to Eretz Yisrael and to fulfill the promises that Hashem himself had reinstated or repeated to Yaakov. So on the heels of that triumph over Lavan, in Parshas Vayishlach, having met angels for a second time, Yaakov has every legitimate reason to feel confident and to feel as if this encounter with Esav will emerge or will be victorious for him. And yet, famously, he says, Katonti mikol hachasadim, he davens, he takes steps that are practical in nature, and Chazal see Yaakov as a paradigm that in this world, even a tzaddik can't assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu's timing. You may assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terminus, but that terminus can emerge in the sweep of thousands of years. So, for example, I'll just read three or four statements in Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Vayishlach, because Chazal were sensitive to many different issues. Amar lo amakom, this is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yudan, Shuvah l'eretz molad el eretz avotecha, Hashem himself dispatched Yaakov back to Eretz Yisrael. Aval pikein vayir Yaakov meod. Yaakov was very worried. Elamikan she'ein haftacha letzadik be'olam hazeh. There are no promises, there are no guarantees, even for a tzaddik in this world. Rav Huna said the same thing. Rav Huna v'shem Rav Acha amar hinei anochi imach. Hashem already promised him, I will be with you. Im yelu ki mimodi, Yaakov already solicited that, guaranteed it, mikan. She'ein haftacha letzadik be'olam hazeh. Rav Huna v'shem Rav Acha said the same thing. Parallel narrative to Moshe. Moshe is sent on a mission, so it's not just the merit that you deserve, but you're performing a mission. Yaakov is on a divine mission to return to Eretz Yisrael, to settle the land, to realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises and expectations. Similarly, Moshe was dispatched by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to return to Mitzrayim, to liberate the Jewish people. And Hashem promises him and delivers signs and protects him. And yet, in that hotel, for whatever reason, without getting into the details now, Moshe almost loses his son. According to some opinions, Moshe's life was threatened. So there is no guarantee in this world. And as much as we know that the terminus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already pre-established, the route and the trajectory to reaching that terminus. I said in slightly different terms, theologically, a very famous distinction between Emunah and Bitachon. Ramban draws this distinction. Emunah is the general belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises, hashkacha, the manners by which he governs his world. Bitachon is, how will you fare in a particular moment, facing a particular crisis, medical, national, military, financial. And a person doesn't have the right to have bitachon, unless he's even a tzaddik of Yaakov's nature. But why would a person assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will assist him in that particular issue, if to daven for it, but you can't just guarantee it? Some other statements in the Medrash. It's not directly about Bitachon of Yaakov, but it carries the same flavor of Vayachetz Esa'am. Yaakov divides the nation. Limedcha Tara Derech Eretz. Torah is teaching you a lesson. Shulei Adam Nosin Kamamonu Bezavid Achat. As we would say, don't store all your eggs in one basket. Yaakov realizes that things could go south, things could deteriorate. He may lose the battle. He may win the war, but he may lose the battle. Therefore, he has to sequester half of his camp or parts of his camp elsewhere to assure that some of his progeny, some of his children will survive. And getting back more to the attitude of fear and concern and how people throughout the generations learned from Yaakov, the Medrash says that the story of Purim could have ended very differently. I think sometimes we simplify the Purim story because the miracles were so impressive and such euphoria. But Chazal didn't see it that way. There are plenty of statements of Chazal that suggest that the fate of the Jewish people in Persia is very much hanging in the balance during Purim. The deed had already been established, or the Gezeira had already emerged from Shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, in Shemayim, had already determined to let this Gezeira unfold and to let this catastrophe occur. And it was only the rallying of Am Yisrael and of Esther, Lech Kenosis, Kol HaYudim. The matter says that, to a degree, they learned this from Yaakov. They would have been more confident in themselves had Yaakov not expressed his fear. This is Rabbi Nasan. Ru'uyim hayu Yisrael kolaya b'mei Haman. The Jewish people would have been destroyed in the days of Haman. Idolation ismach adatam al das hazakin avihim. If they hadn't seen Yaakov as a precedent, Amru, they reasoned, ma avinu Yaakov shivticha kadosh baruch hu. Yaakov had his sets of promises, and yet Nisiara, he was worried, anu alachas kama v'kama. We who, having lived in Galus for 70 years in Persia, although many of us still remember the Beis HaMikdash, and many of them still felt that confidence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's offer of assistance, they were able to draw an analogy in a Kal V'chomer from Yaakov and sense the fear that Yaakov expresses. In some ways, Chazal are even critical of Yaakov for even initiating this encounter with Esav. The beginning of the Medrash Rabbah, Chazal, the Medrash quotes a pasuk, Machazik bi aznei kelev, if you basically rile a sleeping dog. Over misaber al riv lo lo, and you get involved in a fight, in an argument which isn't yours. And Chazal see this as a quiet critique of Yaakov, who says that Esav was really scouting Yaakov or pursuing Yaakov. It appears, at least in the text, that Yaakov initiates the meeting, and one could have claimed that Yaakov has every right to initiate the meeting. This is his chance, this is his moment. He's already triumphed over Lavan. But Chazal are a little bit critical. Maybe you should avoid. Maybe you should have evaded Esav rather than confronting Esav. All these statements taken together demonstrate Chazal approving of Yaakov's practical measures, Chazal approving of Yaakov's fear and worry, Chazal seeing this as a template or a paradigm for future generations, and critical of Yaakov for the one decision that initiated or proactively enabled or prompted this type of encounter. Now, I said that Chazal would read Parshas Vayishlach on the eve of their meetings in Rome, these diplomatic missions, when Jewish people were living in a very dark period, subjugated, subservient, powerless, looking for some rational, practical method to assure their survival, and thank God they did. But in some ways, the post-Vayetze story of Yaakov and Vayishlach is even more relevant and more resonant for living in the state of Israel during a period of redemption, because we feel as if the same promises that Yaakov was given are now not just delivered to us, but are being actualized. We're living in our homeland. And because we have, thank God, benefited from such an impressive string of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's miracles, sometimes it induces a theological swagger. We guarantee in our own minds a certain narrative or a certain sequence of events, and we fail to properly adhere to reason, ration, pragmatics, for some people, the experience of redemption is intoxicating, and it suspends both halachic and moral considerations, and sometimes even practical considerations. And I think that that's something which, each in their own way, Rav Lichtenstein or Rav Amital bequeathed to the Talmidim who had this chus to study with them. Rav Amital lived under the constant specter of the Holocaust, having seen a world destroyed and a world rebuilt, Olam Charev V'Olam Banoi, and realizing how fragile the Am HaYoshev B'Tzion was, this remnant of Mutzal Mi'esh, and that made him very, very pragmatic, very careful, very small-c conservative, even a decision which most people misunderstood to join the Peres government in 1996 after the assassination of Rabin. People saw this as ideological and political. It's just he thought that they were drawing the boundaries in 1996-97. He wanted to be inside and try to save as much as possible. It wasn't a very ambitious decision. And Rav Lichtenstein, by his nature, was very moderate, very temperate, very balanced. I think, in some ways, his redemptive fever probably ran a bit lower than some other people, probably myself included. Not that I'm equating myself, but I think it was a very, very much a grounded Lithuanian or Soloveitchikian approach. But we never felt as if the redemptive excitement and euphoria that maybe was very prevalent in the Rav Kook world, it never dominated or tilted towards suggestions that we could take chances or take risks because we could guarantee HaKadosh Baruch Hu's support in a very, very difficult world, even though the world seemed redemptive and we had benefited so miraculously from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yeshua. So it's an important consideration to remind ourselves of during the week of Parshas Vayishlach.